Well, here we are gathered together at InfoWeb Broadcast Center, enjoying our morning stream of news and information and music, most of all music. And we're here because we want to be. Over in Studio 3A, Tyrone and Toad Lunch are hanging out playing some good tunes. And I've been drifting in and out, saying hello and doing some stuff in the studio there. And then I stepped out to do this little day page segment. And I was really saddened. Took a little preview look at Amy Goodman's Democracy Now! Program, which will air this afternoon at 2 p.m. here on Radio InfoWeb. And somehow got me to thinking about Captain America, the First Avenger. Yeah, I like those comic book films. I used to read comic books when I was a kid. My mother would hunt them down wherever it was that I hid them or put them or collected them. She would find them and destroy them. She'd say, "Why are you reading these? You should be reading books." I did read books. I read tons of books when I was a kid. For punishment, once they put me in the school library and made me hang out there for several weeks. So I was a bad, bad boy. I published a school newspaper without the permission of the school. And it was okay until one day I published an issue of the newspaper that was critical of some of the people in the school's administration. And that got me into a world of trouble. And this was a long time ago. This was the 1960s, kids. So I got banished to the library, which wasn't really such a bad punishment as it turned out. I must have read every book in that library. It was awesome. Just goes to show that, you know, when the government or the administration of the school that you're at or whatever tries to get you down and control you, they can't get your spirit. They can't get what's inside your head yet. They're working on it. In movies like Captain America, the First Avenger, they have all these fancy electronic machines or tesseracts or whatever. And maybe they could use those to get inside your head someday. And all it does is encourage the bad guys in government to keep up that stuff. But I was watching the Captain America movie and thinking, wow, the Nazi Germany thing, that was bad. But what we have today is worse. And so in a moment, we're going to turn to Amy Goodman to find out what's worse. But just to lead into the story, there's a journalist, Barrett Brown, who just spent his 300th day behind bars this week on a range of charges filed after he used information obtained by the hacker group Anonymous to report on operations of private intelligence firms in the United States. Now, he's not a member of Anonymous. He just got a hold of the information and used it to report. Amy will speak to Peter Ludlow, professor of philosophy at Northwestern University, whose article, The Strange Case of Barrett Brown, recently appeared in The Nation. And he says in the article, considering that the person who carried out the actual Stratfor hack had several priors and is facing a maximum of 10 years in prison, whereas Barrett is facing a maximum of 105 years in prison, the inescapable conclusion is that the problem is not with the hack itself, but with Brown's journalism. In other words, it's one thing to hack the information, but what's worse is to publicize it and make people aware of what's really going on in the secret world of the government screwing people. So the case against Brown could suggest criminality to even link to something or share a link with someone. Yes, the First Amendment has certainly gone down the toilet. So let's turn to this sneak peek at Amy Goodman's reportage on the subject for today's DayPage news segment.
Well, as NSA leaker Edward Snowden remains at a Moscow airport, Army whistleblower Bradley Manning is on trial, and WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange is holed up in the Ecuadorian embassy in London, today we look at the strange story of another man tied to the world of cyber activism who faces over 100 years in prison. His name is Barrett Brown. He's an investigative reporter with ties to the hacking collective Anonymous. He has spent the past 300 days in jail and has been denied bail. He faces 17 charges, ranging from threatening an FBI agent to credit card fraud, for posting a link online to a document that contains stolen credit card data. But according to his supporters, Brown is being unfairly targeted for daring to investigate the highly secretive world of private intelligence and military contractors.
Before Brown's path crossed with the FBI, he frequently contributed to Vanity Fair, The Huffington Post, The Guardian, and other news outlets. In 2009, Brown created Project PM, which was, quote, dedicated to investigating private government contractors working in the secretive fields of cybersecurity, intelligence, and surveillance. He was particularly interested in the documents leaked by WikiLeaks and Anonymous. In the documentary We Are Legion, Barrett Brown explains the importance of information obtained by hackers.
Some of the most important things that have been, have had the most far-reaching influence and have been the most important in terms of what's been discovered, not just by Anonymous, but by the media in the aftermath, is a result of hacking. That information can't be obtained by the traditional journalistic process, or it can't be obtained or won't be obtained by a congressional committee or a federal oversight committee. For the most part, that information has to be, you know, obtained by hackers.
In 2011, the group Anonymous hacked into the computer system of the private security firm H.B. Gary Federal and disclosed thousands of internal emails. Barrett Brown has not been accused of being involved in the hack, but he did read and analyze the documents, eventually crowdsourcing the effort through Project PM. One of the first things he discovered was a plan to tarnish the reputations of WikiLeaks and sympathetic journalist Glenn Greenwald of The Guardian. Brown similarly analyzed and wrote about the millions of internal company emails for Stratfor Global Intelligence that were leaked on Christmas Eve 2011. Shortly thereafter, the FBI acquired a warrant for Brown's laptop and authority to seize any information from his communications, or in journalism parlance, his sources. In September 2012, a troop of armed agents surged into Brown's apartment in Dallas, Texas, and handcuffed him face down on the floor. He's been in prison ever since.
Well, for more, we're joined by Peter Ludlow, professor of philosophy at Northwestern University. He's written extensively on hacktivist actions against people, against private intelligence firms and the surveillance state. His recent article for The Nation is called The Strange Case of Barrett Brown. Peter Ludlow, welcome to Democracy Now!
Thank you very much.
Talk to us about Barrett Brown, the importance of his case, given all the others that we've been dealing with on this show now for many years.
Well, yeah, it's important for two reasons. First of all, it's showing that, to some extent, all of us could be targets, because the principal reasons that they're going after him with is this sort of claim that he was involved in credit card fraud or something like that. I mean, that's completely fallacious. I mean, in effect, what he did was take a link from a chat room and copied that link and pasted it into the chat room for Project PM. That is, he took a link that was broadcast widely on the internet, and it was a link to the Stratfor hack information, and he just brought it to the attention of the editorial board of Project PM. And because there were, for whatever reason, unencrypted credit card numbers and validation codes among those 5 million other emails, the government is claiming that he was engaged in credit card fraud. They're claiming that Project PM was a criminal enterprise. And so, basically, for our interest, why this is interesting to us is basically it makes it dangerous to even link to something or to share a link with someone. Go ahead. Yeah,
well,
please.
One of the things that you raise is in some of your writings on this is the incestuous relationship between the Justice Department, the government, and these private firms that are being now targeted by cyber activists. And could you talk about that as well?
Well, sure. A lot of these private intelligence companies are started by ex-CIA, NSA people. Some people come from those agencies and rotate back into the government. I mean, you even see with the case of Snowden, he was actually a contractor for a private intelligence company, Booz Allen. And, I mean, people think about the NSA, FBI, CIA, and they think of those are the people that are doing the surveillance of you and doing this intelligence work. But really, if you look at how much the United States spends on intelligence, 70% of that is actually going to these private intelligence contractors. So, you know, if you add up CIA, NSA, FBI, that's just a tip of the iceberg. So there's all this sort of spook stuff going on in the private realm. And yeah, right, a lot of it is very incestuous, is a revolving door, and no one's investigating it or even talking about it, as far as I can
tell. Let's go to Barrett Brown in his own words. In March 2012, Democracy Now! Spoke with Barrett soon after his house was raided.
On March 5th, I received a tip that I was about to be raided by the FBI. I left my apartment here in Dallas and went to my mom's residence here in the same city. Next morning, three FBI agents arrived at my mom's place. I went out and talked to them. They said my apartment had just been raided. The door was damaged. They would take care of that. And that they also asked me if I had any laptops with me that I wanted to give them. I said no. A few hours later, the FBI returned to my mom's house with another warrant, this time for her house, and detained the both of us 3 hours while they searched the residence. They found several laptops I had stashed somewhere in the house and left the search warrants left another one in my apartment, which I got when I came back here the next day or so. The warrants themselves refer to the information that they're seeking as regarding Anonymous, of course, a few other things of that nature, and also two companies, HP Gary and Endgame Systems. Both of these are intelligence contracting companies that Anonymous had a run-in with in February of 2011, during which a number of emails were taken from HP Gary in particular, which themselves revealed a number of conspiracies being perpetuated by those companies in conjunction with the Justice Department and several other institutions, including Bank of America, against WikiLeaks and against several journalists. The time since, I've spent a lot of time going over those emails, researching them, conducting other research, and otherwise trying to expose a number of things that have been discovered by virtue of those emails from HP Gary having been taken. I sincerely believe that my activities on that front have contributed to me being raided the other day, and will no doubt contribute to any further action the FBI decides to take. I would just also note the Justice Department itself is very much intertwined with this issue and has been for a while, and in no way can conduct a fair investigation against me based on what I've revealed, what I've helped to sort of emphasize about them.
That was Barrett Brown in his own words just after the raid. Yeah. Peter Ludlow, talk about what he had released. Talk about what he got from HP Gary and how this links to Glenn Greenwald.
Sure. Well, what they uncovered was, I mean, it's actually a little bit subtle, right? It's because it begins with the Bank of America being concerned that WikiLeaks had information on it. Bank of America goes to the United States Department of Justice. The Department of Justice leads them to Hunton and Williams, the big law fix-it firm in the D.C. area, who in turn hooks them up with a group of private intelligence contractors that went under the umbrella Team Themis. And Team Themis had a number of proposals and projects that were exposed in all of this. They included running kind of a psyops operation against Chamber Watch, which is a group that sort of monitors the Chamber of Commerce, and it was an attempt to undermine it, and Glenn Greenwald and other individuals. And I mean, there were many, many plans that they had, many, many things, but some of the documents released showed that they were saying they were going to create fake documents, leak them to Greenwald, and then when Greenwald eventually released them, they would expose it as a fraud and attempt to undermine him in that way. And they had a similar plan for Chamber Watch as well.
And their concern with Greenwald was that he was giving that his defense of WikiLeaks was giving legitimacy to WikiLeaks
that, was their
that it didn't deserve.
That was the concern, yeah. And they actually said in there, well, he's just a professional journalist and he'll fold under pressure immediately. I mean, apparently they were wrong about that, so yeah.
Yeah, we'll leave that right there. But for more on that story, check into Democracy Now! At 2 p.m. here on Radio InfoWeb at radio.infoweb.net. So, wow, the war on truth, the war on freedom, the war on citizens. How awesome is that? I'm Rex Ochford, and that is Day Page for today. We hope that you remain free and not behind bars for breathing or violating some other law or regulation that might be seen as a threat to national security. And hopefully we'll see you on the next day, Paige. We appreciate your comments. Send us email to radio@infoweb.net, or you can call us at 646-450-5477. And we're on Facebook at facebook.com/radioinfoweb and all the rest. See you next time. It's a Mel production.